You are just in time for Ham Nation. We have got an amazing first guest tonight, a very impressive amateur radio operator who just happens to be a YL. Not that that has anything to do with anything. We're going to introduce you to Kristen, K6WX, and you're going to be amazed at the big brain on Kristen. Kristen is the real deal. We're also going to tell you all about Foursquare antennas. We've got Newsline, and we're going to tell you about Skywarn Recognition Day coming up on Saturday, December 5th. So get out there and make contact with all of those people who help keep everybody safe from the weather. And it's been a crazy weather year everywhere, hasn't it? That's all coming up next on Ham Nation. Ham Nation is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether employees are working in the office or remotely. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode 482 for December 2nd, 2020. How to build a Foursquare.
Hello, everybody. It's Bob Heil, and we're starting off December into Christmas mode, of course. Sarah and I got the Christmas tree up and had a lot of help from Gracie, our little 6-pound doggy. But we're here to bring you some really good news tonight. I mean, you're going to learn how to put up, I think it was 40,000 feet of wire in a Foursquare, you know, all kinds of good stuff like that. And so you want to see what George has got cooking. Don has great news, but I want to, first of all, do a little roundabout here. Gordo's got some good stuff. Gordo, how are you doing? You and Susie okay?
We're just fine. We've got some high winds coming into Southern California, so all of the hams are cranking down their towers, and we get to go on fire watch duty tomorrow. So it'll be a windy day in Southern Cal.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Okay, well, we'll have prayers for you. Amanda's here. Amanda, how are you doing? You're okay out there. No fires or winds going on there, is there?
No, there's no fire, no winds, a little bit of snow, not necessarily here in Canyon City, Colorado, but, you know, weather is as predictable as it normally is in December. 22 degrees and just chill.
Well, we have had gorgeous weather here in Southern Illinois. I mean, we've had one day it kind of got down to 30 for just a few hours, but we've been really lucky. And so we've escaped 1 month of snow, that's for sure. Well, our very, very special guest is a wonderful lady that I met some years ago. We always met at one of the ham fests, mostly Pacificon, stuff like that. Kristen, who is K6WX, and I want to bring her on. How are you doing, Kristen? Thank you for being
with
us.
Oh, my pleasure. Doing great here. It's a beautiful, another sunny day in California. You know, beautiful San Jose. It's been very dry, but nice.
That's great. Well, Amanda's with us too, and she knows a little bit about your background also. Amanda, are you still there? I think you were. Yeah. Why don't you ladies take off and find out a little bit about what she's been doing out there on the coast? I know it's really exceptional, especially with her new appointment. Let's talk about that. Go ahead, Amanda.
Definitely. To our viewers, Kristen, we can't cover Kristen in an hour. I'm going to put that out there right now. We have a lot to go over, so we're going to go over a few topics. And one, definitely, Kristen, you were just appointed the Pacific Division Director. I know under sad circumstances, but still congratulations. And welcome to the family of that. We're getting more and more women involved in the division, and I'm really glad that you're there. And what do you have to say about it?
Well, thank you very much, Amanda. Right. Unfortunately, K6JAT Jim Teamstra passed away just at the end of October, I believe. And it was a very sad thing. Jim was very young and really sad to miss him. He was a great mentor and a great division director. And being the vice director for the division, I naturally stepped into the role. And it's kind of exciting, even though it's under sad circumstances, because I can take on a bigger role in guiding the league into what our future is going to be, which is always something we think hard about, because there's so much that we can do to make ham radio better and more enticing to people and to serve hams better. So now I get to vote. I don't have to throw spitballs from the back row.
I've heard those stories before of the vice directors sitting out. You know, they send a lot of messages in between the hand messages. I'm just kidding. I don't actually know. Well, thank you for representing the ARRL in the Pacific Division. I think the constituents there are very lucky to have you in that role. So we've jumped way ahead in your ham radio career. So let's move it back a little bit. How did you get into amateur radio? What sparked it?
So, gosh, we go all the way back. I used to be on CB in the mid-1960s, back when they had call signs. KCN1322, as I recall, was our call sign. And my dad was an auxiliary policeman. And that's how we kept in touch when he was out on patrol. And so radio had been in the house all the time. But ham radio was considered by my father, anyway, as an elitist hobby and therefore not obtainable. But I always had the amateur radio handbook because it had all the tube diagrams in the back, and I used to fix TVs and stuff like that. So it was a handy reference. But it wasn't until I was, gosh, a senior at MIT that I got into ham radio. A friend of mine, you know, we were discussing this very thing, Sam, you know, my history with radio, and he says, oh, yo, you just got to get the real thing, get a ham radio license. And so, you know, next thing I knew, I was down at the federal building in Boston taking the test.
How incredible. First, the CB license. My parents used to have CB licenses. That's so funny. They mm-hmm. had just briefly mentioned it to me a little bit ago. And, you know, she has another license now, everybody. She's now recently a licensed pilot, right?
Yes, that's right. That was, golly, about 3 years worth of effort working, you know, trying to do my regular job and also go to flight training. And so I became a private pilot about a year ago, and I bought an airplane, and I even flew it back from Texas, which was a pretty ambitious thing to do as a relatively new pilot.
Absolutely. Okay, and what kind of plane did you get?
I got a Cirrus SR-22T, which is a pretty fast airplane. It's a carbon fiber composite, cruises at about 160 knots, something like that. And it's a wonderful airplane. It's you know, 10 years old, but who cares? It gets me places fast.
Absolutely. And all of our aviation fans are just going to go nuts over this. So, well, thank you for sharing that. So I don't know, you probably won't be taking a flight to Japan anytime soon, but Kristen is also has a huge background in Japan and fluent in Japanese as well. Is that correct? What sent you over to Japan, and why did you keep going, and what's your passion?
そうなんですよ。 日本語 できますよ。 So I went to Japan. I started going to Japan in 1982. It's a long time ago now. It was kind of an accident. I designed something, and they wanted the designer to go over and install this piece of equipment. And I went over there for a couple of weeks and kind of fell in love with it and ended up spending about 5 years living there, and then went back on and off over the years. And now I try to go once or twice a year, at least before the virus. You know, I've kept my Japanese up and can read and write. I can't hand write very well, but I can read and write Japanese in books and on the computer and such, and have lots of friends. I have I own a house over there, and I have a Japanese ham license too, J1IZZ in Japan.
Now, that would be a rare one for us to work, you guys. I would really look out for that call. Oh, and yeah. But you also have a Japanese restaurant, is that correct?
I do, actually. It's in Gardena, which is sort of, it's in LA County. It's near Torrance, which is a big enclave of Japanese immigrants. And it was kind of a crazy thing to do, but there you go. That's me. But yeah, it's a Japanese restaurant. It's been around for almost 30 years. I'm the third owner, I think. And of course, it's tough times right now with the lockdowns and such. Returning to California, revenue is way, way, way down. So it's kind of struggling right now, but was quite profitable before that.
Absolutely. Now let's go back to some ham radio stuff here. I really liked this this quote that you sent to me that you say, "One of my missions in ham life is to enlighten people on technical topics and to dispel the conventional wisdom where appropriate." And then you have a whole talk about it. Where'd you get that theory from, and why'd you come up with that?
So, well, I'm an electrical engineer and computer scientist by training. And when ham radio stuff comes up, sometimes I think it's a little askew. And I try to kind of fix those things. Well, I don't know if it's fixing it, but at least try to give people my take on this kind of thing when I can. And it kind of started from being a net control on this net called the 9 a.m. talk net. Once a week these days. And then that's often turned technical when I'm on there as net control. And people ask all sorts of questions, and I try to answer as best I can. And a lot of my talks come out of that. And the one that I mentioned to you is called Ground is a Myth. And everybody talks about ground. You know, we think we know what this thing is. You know, there's these wires we hook up to the back of our rigs, and sometimes we even pound these big metal rods into the yard. But what are you really doing, and does it make sense? And I try to dispel the myth that there's any real thing called ground. I just don't find any way to describe ground in any useful fashion. In fact, I think it confuses people.
Thank you. And I'm going to send this over to Bob for his comment on that very subject here real soon. But if you didn't mind, do you want to tell us all where you're working these days and what you do?
Yes, here. I can only tell you so much, otherwise I'd have to kill you. But I work at Apple and have been there almost 12 years now. And I work in the networking team. So I work on network protocols. But more specifically, I work on creating models of network traffic and reproducing those models. And I also do mathematical modeling of network traffic and of performance characteristics.
That's way above my pay grade. I can understand why you have to kill people if you tell them.
That's right.
Bob, did you want to chime in on her wonderful theory about grounding? I know you're passionate about this too, and I think you're on the same page as Kristen. Or if you had any other questions for her, go ahead.
I always get myself in trouble because when I talk about some of the things that I learned years ago from, really it started with a CBS engineer, and it went through all of my early days and then up through the current days. Grounding is, I don't think anybody has the right answer to it, but the problem is people get all these ground straps and they strap everything in the world together, and it's ground loop city. And that's the big problem, is that we don't have one ground, we have 10.
And right, there's no such thing as the one ground. It doesn't exist.
Right. And you try to explain that because everybody's, I guess, learned something different. But I have a great demonstration. I've got a little powered speaker here, and it's just full of ground loop. I mean, the 60-cycle hum is crazy. And when I remove the third pin, everything's mm-hmm. happy. But then you're going to say, oh, yeah, you get electric. No, it's grounded with the shield signal. Yeah, you don't need
that's right.
That. Yeah, but
that's right. Yeah, the most fun I ever had giving that talk was, you know, I was in Yuma, and I gave Ground as a Myth, and I watched this guy in the audience. He's sitting there, he's like shaking his head like this for the whole talk. No. And so of course, when we get to the Q&A, he raises his hand, and I said, "Okay, what's up?" And he says, "Well, you don't understand. The thing is, you have analog ground and you have digital ground and you have, you know, lightning ground and this ground and that ground. And I said, there's your problem. You know, it's a muddled notion.
Yeah, it's quite a subject that you can usually raise a few hairs on the back of people's neck. But I only go by the science. I study this science. It's one ground and everybody's thrilled. But it's just one of those things. There's so many things like that in our amateur radio. But you just keep experimenting and you'll figure it out, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Absolutely.
And is there any chance ever that Apple is going to get into any kind of products for RF, you know, like maybe a receiver or anything? Or is it just going to be Bluetooth and that's about as far as they go?
Well, I can't comment on future products, but imagine the number of radios that are in your iPhone. Think about it. There's all sorts of different radios and lots of different frequencies involved and interesting antenna designs and all sorts of things like that. So I would submit that Apple is already pretty involved in radio.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, you need to come out and help Sarah with her new iPhone 12. She's having all kinds of problems trying to figure out what's going on. It's like all of us, you get really used to something and you don't want to change it. Make fun of me. This is a 6. And oh, I hope I never have to change it or do something because it does just what I want. It's a phone. I know there's so many other things. What do you think, Gordo? You with me on that? I bet you are.
Yep, we try and describe ground and counterpoise for our maritime mobile high-frequency operators. And they got all these wires inside the hull for a capacitive ground. And I go, why all the wires? You're sitting on the world's best ground, and that is seawater. So that completes the other half of the automatic tuner's antenna system. Hope Kristen agrees on that. But why run the wires inside the hull when all you got to do is go to a single through hull that is metallic? And watching galvanic corrosion, of course, and electrolysis, which you don't want, create a ground for that tuner. Go ahead, Bob.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I can probably put a cap on this whole thing where I had a guy not long ago write me an email, and he said, I'm having a lot of RF problems in your microphones and the speakers and all that. He said, so you're going to have to fix it. And my first question was always, very gracefully, what kind of antenna? Well, what's that got to do with it? Please, what kind of antenna? It's got a vertical. Okay. How many radials? Oh, the company I bought this from says you don't need any radials with this antenna. I said, really? Okay. What do you do with the center conductor of your coax? Well, that goes to the vertical. Okay. What do you do with the shield? That's the other half of the antenna. Oh, you don't hook it up. You don't need it. I said, really? So how can you nicely tell the guy that he's only got half an antenna? No wonder where all the RF going all over. But,
Right. It goes right back to physics. You can describe that exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this has been so great. I wish, like Amanda told you in the beginning, you're going to have to come back. We'll have an hour with Christian. Can we do that sometime? Oh,
yeah, absolutely. I'd love to.
Yeah, I think we should do that. Cool. I vote yes. I think we have a lot more to learn from Kristen and a lot more of her experiences to know about. So I can't wait. So you stick around, girl. Coming on in the future. Okay.
Okay. Sounds great.
Thank you so much.
I really appreciate you coming on, and I'm really serious about having you back sometime, just practically doing a whole hour. That would be wonderful. And I know we have a lot of people that would listen because you have quite a reputation and it grows all the time. First of all, I want to make sure that I congratulate you personally for your new assignment there with the ARRL. We need more people like you in the league, and I'm so thrilled that you have that appointment. And we're all going to be there to support you in any way, even though we're not in California, but we can be there to help. So have a nice holiday. Work all the DX you can.
You too. And just work Kamchatka.
All right. Be sure you know which side of the soldering iron to hold, but I think you already know.
Oh, I think I got that figured out.
Thank you so much. Appreciate
you. Okay, my pleasure.
Wow. And who says ham radio is gone? No, no, no. It's just starting for so many of us, even though I've been here a long time. But it's just one of those things that we all need to pay attention, because there's a lot going on in this hobby. Well, speaking of going on, let's go back down to Costa Mesa. I think there's way more going on than what I got here in my shack today. What's happening, Gordo?
Well, there's quite a drive these days for more ham radio instructors. And all the instructors are saying, well, you know, we're locked down and we can't teach a class. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of classes being taught via Zoom and Skype one-on-one. And I'm very happy to say that the instructor programs that are out there, both the American Radio Relay League, and thanks, Kristen, for coming on board tonight, as well as the W5YI group. We support instructors, and you know, instructors, you're also supported by Kenwood, Yaesu, ICOM, Alinco, BioNO, the battery folks. You have plenty of folks supporting you. For instance, the W5YI group has the frequency chart that's available for instructors. CQ has a sample magazine. ARRL has certificates. W5YI has certificates. These are free, absolutely free. ICOM America, of course, has their very large band plan chart. All of these are available. So let's find out how you can get involved in teaching ham radio or becoming an Elmer to help our service grow. So, Victor, let's roll with the first shot. All of you, please write down haminstructor.com. All one word, haminstructor.com. Go to that site, sign up, and you'll have access to technician class, general class, and extra class instructor guides written for instructors, not necessarily the students. And you also have access to all the audio on the air, which everybody has access by going to W5YI.org and looking on the main page for download audio. So the W5YI group, ARRL, other ham radio organizations are really behind instructors. In our instructor's guide, I give you a good idea on how to come up with a class flyer. I give you great ideas on the class layout. And when those students first hit your classroom, look, they don't have a blank desk. They have something there. Well, with COVID, of course, they'd have to be separated 6 to 10 feet. And we've done a couple classes like that in alternate topics. But it can be worked out with the right ventilation. But for right now, when the whole country is pretty well locked down, you may want to think about doing your class on Zoom. Now, when we do a class, we recommend more than just a talking head. That's why you're not seeing my talking head, but rather the stuff I bring to the classroom. And you'll find that having stuff will really create an interest beyond just having to get through the test or go for 8 weeks or a whole weekend. You'll find that on every break, the local classmates will come on up, start feeling, touching, playing with the CW oscillator. And by the way, the CW oscillator is can be nothing more, and we'll show you right afterwards, a clothespin and a sauna alert. But lots of neat things out there to get the students interested beyond just passing the test. And when we do our instructor courses, look, there's Randy, 1, 2, 3, 4 over there. We also bring the whole bunch of stuff because people love to look at the different stuff. If you're going to talk about a capacitor, show them the plates. If you're going to talk about a coil, show them the magnetic properties of a coil. And we encourage you to, once the pandemic is over, will it be next year? That's the question mark. When we can begin to put our classrooms back together, bottom right-hand side, you'll see that you can double the amount of students in a classroom after COVID. This is all after the pandemic's over, by putting three on one side and two on the other. Again, not now, but later. Here you see a classroom that turned into our backyard because our regular classroom facility at the last minute became unavailable. We didn't realize that in Southern California, we would join Amanda with weather down around 42 degrees that morning. So, of course, as an instructor, you have to be prepared for everything. Bring your own bonfire to keep the students warm. And it really worked out well. It was a fun class. As you can see, by putting once the pandemic is over, when permissible, by putting students on each side of the table, you can really pack them in. But again, not this year and probably not next year, something to think about. But a smiling face when the students are greeted, that's Susie in 6GLF. She's getting ready for all those students to come on into the backyard and spend a weekend learning about ham radio. If you're going to talk about capacitors, there it is down there at the bottom. Coils, there they are off to the left-hand side. Power cords, you got to pass it around. It makes the class fun. Now, if you're doing Zoom, you're not able to pass it around, but by golly, you can get in there nice and close and show them exactly what we're talking about on the insides of ham radio. And certainly have the outsides of ham radio for your students or one-on-one to show them how the radios dial up. And notice I have a rotator. I actually unplug from my radio room and plug into this rotator down here so they can watch the dial turn, and then they just lift their head up and they see the antenna rotating, which when the wind blows tomorrow at 40 knots here in Southern Cal, I anticipate maybe doing it on its own. Scouts of America, the radio merit badge requirement, you'll find that technician class covers many of the same topics. So what we've done in your free instructor's guide is to show you the pages and what to teach, as well as the CD courses that are offered as well for students, 4 for tech, 4 for general, 6 for extra class. They'll actually see where to tune in on the right track to hear what we're talking about that coincides with Scouts of America. And, of course, we have a lot of demos that we recommend, and we're going to do a great demo in a couple weeks of a blazing pickle right here. So we'll see what happens on that night, but it's going to be a lot of fun. But you got to have Kazing, and you can do it over Zoom just as easily as you can do it in front of the classroom. But we encourage you to get all your demos lined up ahead of time. Make sure that everything's all soldered together and they're going to work well, and then go for it. Now, that's Mikey. Michael, one of our former NET controllers, and he's still out there, very active. And this is showing the conductance. And again, you can do this, instructors, as we show you how, via Zoom. And it's quite an interesting demo to show voltage, current, and resistance. And then, of course, the finale I always like to do on our next-to-last class session dealing with safety is the blazing pickle. And that's right, it's 110 volts interrupted by the CW keyer to the two pegs that we puncture with a pickle. And there's Dave Bell, noted author, instructor, TV personality, lighting off a pickle, and he's having as much fun as the rest of us in playing ham radio. So, instructors, we hope all of you can come on board, and you get to download absolutely free of charge these instructor guides. You could also, once you get started teaching some classes, earn patches. everybody's there for you, and we hope that you'll get involved in ham radio. And again, go to the W5YI.org and look at all the free stuff at the Ham Instructor site, part of YI, and you'll see that we're trying to take good care of you. That's taking good care of helping the ham radio service grow. And yes, we can do it via Zoom as well as Skype. And one of our strong supporters with the band charts and just a strong supporter is ICOM America. So let's take a look and see what ICOM has for us tonight. ICOM?
Ham for the holidays. ICOM's newest handheld amateur radio is the ID52A. Larger radio, larger color display, and louder audio. This VHF-UHF digital transceiver is much more than a replacement for the ID51A. The color display is 2.3 inches for exceptional viewability, and the audio is 80% louder. This multifunction dual-band D-Star transceiver supports DR mode for easy access to local repeaters based on internal GPS information, as well as terminal and access point modes. The ID52A also has Bluetooth for audio and data control. The IC705 is the perfect sidekick for hams who like to enjoy what both the great indoors and outdoors have to offer. It's the perfect QRP companion. Base station features and functionalities at the tips of your fingers in a portable package covering HF, 6 meters, 2 meters, and 70 centimeters. This compact rig weighs in just over 2 pounds with RF direct sampling for most of the HF band and IF sampling for frequencies above 25 megahertz. 4.3 inch color touchscreen with live band scope and waterfall. 5 watts with the BP272. 10 watts with 13.8 volt DC external. Single sideband CW, AM, FM, as well as full D-Star functions. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM radios.
And while you're there at icomamerica.com/amateur, go on over to icomamerica.com/hamnation. That's where you'll find out all the official rules and all of the ICOM drawing winners, where you can enter ICOM's weekly drawing for ICOM swag like T-shirts and hats. That's icomamerica.com/hamnation. And check out the ICOM monthly grand prize drawing at icomamerica.com/hamnation. That's where the rules and all the drawing winners and your name could be in there, just like Joshua Hills, KA5DPS. He is the November winner of the ID5100A. I've got one sitting right there. Great radio. And Joshua, you are going to love that. Now for December, the next radio grand prize is the IC2730A. A great one. icomamerica.com/amateur, icomamerica.com/hamnation. Good luck, and we hope to see your name on the next winner list coming up in December. Over to you, Bob.
Well, I'm glad to see you, Don. You're looking good.
We're trying.
I do hope you're staying safe. Well, we're talking about those Elmers and things. I want to remind everybody that I've been doing 2 and 3, sometimes 4 club meetings a week using Zoom. And some of these things are over 100 in attendance. The clubs join with other local clubs. Just send me a date for a club meeting and I'll be there, because we cover a lot of subjects and it's all a lot of fun, especially the Q&A, where we can help you with a lot of things. So remember, club meetings need programming, if ever, right now. And we've got a really, really nice thing for you guys. Of course, it's free. And sometimes we give things away. So you send me a date for your club meeting. I'd love to visit that. Well, the spectacular thing about the show, we've got so much going on. Kristen was a highlight. But now we are finally going to learn what to do with, I think it's 40,000 feet of wire or whatever. But they all have it together, and you know who I'm talking about. Valerie, Jerry, and Tim Duffy's with them. So take it away, gang. Let's see what's happening. This ought to be fun.
Yeah, it's 14,000 square feet. You had it right the first time, like a couple months ago when you were asking me about it. But yeah. So I know a lot of you have been asking. I've been getting emails and stuff that they want to see some of our antenna farm. So courtesy of Don, K9NR, he came out and took some really good photos of our antenna farm and drone footage. Why don't you roll tape, and then we're going to go right from that into our Foursquare. So there's our farm, and it's kind of busy. We got a lot of trades there doing power washing, and you can see our little scooters going around, but our mule. But there's our towers, and then way in the top of the screen is our commercial tower, and there's even climbers up there. But so here's a lot of our towers with the Yagis on it. And way off to the far right in the back, you can see a little bit of the Foursquare, but we'll focus in on that. And here's our pride and joy. This is our rotating tower. The entire tower rotates at the base, so you don't have to individually turn each antenna. And we got a monster stack on there for 20. That's 3 6 element stacks at 60, 120, 180, plus we have other antennas on there as well. And this is our newest baby on the antenna farm, and this is our Foursquare. So I know, you know, if you know me, you know I'm more of a software person. We make a really good couple, Jerry and I, because I handle the software and Jerry handles the hardware. So I'm going to bring in some big muscle here, Jerry and Tim. K3LR, Tim, are you with us as well?
I am here.
Thanks, Tim, hello, Val, for joining us. So I got some really good technical dudes here for this. So first, let's start. If you want to show the first slide, Victor, we're going to kind of show the makings of it. And then before we kind of tell about that, why don't we talk about what is so special about a Foursquare? You want to kind of talk about it.
Well, the Foursquare will make your signal directive and which is really great. It gives you like 5.5 dB of gain in one direction, and you can switch it very quickly from right in the shack with a control box. So,
and it's transmit and receive.
Yep.
So let's start with that first slide, and this was digging the holes. We used power to dig the holes.
Yeah, we did, because it was July and the ground was super hard. And I've dug enough holes in my life. I didn't want to want to start with four more. So
and we're old. Go back to the other one. That these are how wide, how deep?
They're the auger there is two feet, and we went down about 4.5 feet.
Okay, next one. And then we had to put concrete footers in,
and there's the concrete. The pipe is 3-inch OD pipe.
And that's about a 3/4.
It's only a 1/4-inch wall, inside wall. So, but it's structural tubing, so it's not going anywhere. And that's just part of the form to keep it level. As
how much concrete in there?
About 3/4 yard per hole.
Okay. And next slide is where we attach the plate.
Yeah, that's a ground radial plate. That's my nephew there. He's the silver solder king. And he's silver soldering on ring lugs. And you want a silver solder if, you know, your solder is going to be outside exposed to all the weather. Regular solder will not work. This is 15% silver. It's kind of like a brazing rod. And we use MAP gas because it gets hotter. But right here, he's soldering on the lugs. And then the lugs will get bolted to the plate.
And next one, you can kind of see the plate. If you go to the next one, Victor, you can kind of see the plate's a little bit elevated there, too. This is the finished product.
And this is the finished product. You can see there's 60 radials per plate. They're each 66 feet long. So there's 240 total in the system of 240 radials. So, Tim, why don't you tell us about that liquid gold there that's on there? You're the liquid gold king.
You know, that is the magic sauce. Maybe we call it DX grease, Jerry. That is the JetLube SS30. JetLube SS30. And that's an antioxidant. So that keeps all the corrosion down on those connections so that all of those radial terminal lugs stay firmly connected without any resistance to the DX Engineering radial plate, Jerry. And a great job. You got it all over the place.
And then what we did too, right before we put these ground radials out, is we mowed it as low as we could get it and put them in with landscaping staples. And we're going to give it a good year before we mow again. And when we mow, we'll mow high. But so for right now, we got to let it go and let it grow into the soil, so to speak.
And this is the phasing lines. Each vertical has a phasing line. And I chose to go with an elevated system instead of burying that coax in the ground. If you have a problem, the coax is damaged from water or varmints chewing on it.
Yeah, we have ground squirrels where we live.
You know, if the cable is buried below the ground radials, what do you do? So we just elevated it. But if you elevate it, you got to put on this sausage-looking thing.
See this, where the first four poles are? See how it's a little thicker there? Tim... I'll call you Sausage King of Talmadge. What is that sausage area all about?
So the sausage area is another secret weapon here. Because the feed line, the phasing line is elevated, it could become part of the antenna system. And we don't want it to radiate or interact with the vertical antennas. So those are number 31 ferrite beads that are over the RG11 phasing cable. So there's enough there that it's about 4 feet long worth of ferrite beads, and that acts as an RF choke, and that keeps all the RF off the outside of the cable and keeps that shield dead cold for RF. And we've had a lot of success. We tested this, and it works very well. It's installed here at K3LR as well, and that should take care and make sure that Jerry and Val's four-square array is going to be highly directive and not have interaction with the phasing lines.
Okay, and the next one, Victor. And so I know, Bob, you talked about having a crane. Well, we didn't need a crane because we had this.
This is a slick arrangement, and this is a DX Engineering hinged base assembly. You can see it's insulated, and you remove four of the bolts, and you can lay the thing down by hand. It takes two guys. One guy can do it easily, but someone needs to be on the far end so the far end doesn't get bent up if it hits the ground too soon. But one guy could easily let it down. So
it'll fold over, and then you can do what you need to do. And we just have one, and then we'll move it from
one vertical to the
exactly.
next.
Exactly. Yep. So, anything you want to add here on this, Tim?
No, and, as part of having two guys there, two people there, it's really important, Jerry, as you know, from a safety standpoint, to always have multiple people and be wearing hard hats. And go over a safety plan and know what you're going to do and when the bolts are going to come out so that everything is done very safely.
And those are, how tall are these again?
71 feet.
71 feet tall, and they're spaced apart.
67 and a half feet.
So they're pretty tall, 71 feet.
And thanks for bringing up the safety stuff there, Tim. Yeah. That's always on the top of my list.
And then the next is the box. You want to show that, Victor? There you go.
This is the weatherproof box in the center. Now, I added that just to keep all the connections dry. And there's also a dummy load in the left corner there. Tim, you want to explain all that?
Yeah, so we're going to show a diagram of how all this stuff gets hooked up here in a few minutes. But one of the features of the four-square feeding array of the hybrid coupler is that the antenna system, it all comes together in this hybrid coupler to create the directive patterns. And if there is any reflected power, it gets put into what we call a waster load or a dump load. And that's the 50 ohm dummy load that you see there on the left-hand side of the cabinet. And that delivers a very low SWR to the shack. So that across you know, 300 kilohertz or even 400 kilohertz, the SWR that you see at the shack is very low, and it's part of this hybrid coupler design. And we'll go through a little bit more of that here in a few minutes. Jerry?
Next slide. And so there it is. Those are so those are all 71 feet. 71 feet by 70.
67 and a half, yeah.
It's pretty big. And it was very windy that day. We almost couldn't do the drone. So, and it works fine in the wind.
Yep, it works great in the wind. You can't see any change in the reflected power when it's windy. Now, you got to remember, the ground radials go out 60 feet in all directions. So it takes up a fair amount of property. I don't know. Tim, have you ever figured out how much, what is that, about an acre and a half or so that's... When you count the area the radials take up?
Yeah, it is about an acre and a half. And, of course, you know, if you put up a four square on 40 meters or 20 meters, it's much smaller. I even have a four square here on 10 meters, you know, where the verticals are 8 foot high. So, but you do need to have those quarter wavelength radials. And to echo what Bob said earlier, you know, about the ham that got a vertical antenna that they said it did not need radials, that's the other half of the antenna. And you've put in a great radial field here, Jerry, and that's what makes this thing work. I mean, think if you just had ground rods in there, this antenna system would not work properly. And it would have very low gain and very poor directivity. So putting in those ground radials a quarter wavelength long is very important.
Yeah, we gave up a lot of alfalfa to put that in. The cows across the street are probably going to miss some of that. So here is our box that we keep here in the shack. And if you show the next one, and then, Tim, you can talk about it in the next one.
Yeah, so there are four directions that you can set a four square for. And commonly here in the United States, we set them so that the directivity is on the four azimuth points of 45 degrees, 135 degrees, 225 degrees, and 315 degrees. So that's northeast, southeast, southwest, and northwest. And the DX Engineering TFS, which is what this is, also can be used omni, so that you can actually have an omnidirectional pattern. And I'll show you what the directive parts of this are here in a few minutes. But this is the underneath of the box that Jerry showed that was in that blue box. And here are the four phasing lines that are going to each one of the verticals. And these are RG11. They have to be 75 ohm. And that deals with the fact that a single base impedance is about 36 ohms on a quarter wave vertical. But when you put them together like this, there are mutual impedances involved. And so the best performance is with quarter wave length lines that are RG11, 75 ohms. In Jerry's case, they had to be 3/4 of a wave because he was above ground. But and then you see the port that goes to the dummy load, and then the port at the bottom here, the bottom right, that goes into the transmitter. And then there's a small shielded, it doesn't have to be shielded, but it's nice to have it shielded, cable for the controller, to actually so that that push button controller can control the relays out at the center of the array. And we can go to the next.
Well, go and ahead, the Val. Back one, go back one. And we mounted that face down just to try and make sure it stays dry. And because we didn't have to worry about waterproofing it.
Right, right. This is meant to be mounted on a pipe upside down, but you went one step further, which is great. And so
I usually do.
There are three ways to do things that I think Jerry.
Forward. There's there we go. Thank you.
There's the right way, the wrong way, and the WB9Z way.
So, and the K3LR way.
So here are the four verticals, 1, 2, 3, 4, and they're spaced, as Jerry talked about, a quarter wavelength apart, which for 80 meters at 3.65, which is the middle of the 80-meter DX area for CW and phone, is about 67.5 feet. And then you see the dummy load there. You see the 75 ohm cables that are going out from the controller out to the verticals, and then the wire to the controller. So this is how it's all laid out, and we're going to show the radials here. And so here is the directive pattern. This is what is really cool about this, is you can see that there is great front to back, and what I call, when you're moving the antenna around with those push buttons, the four square has snap. You can see the pattern change instantly. So you can move much faster than any rotator going when you want to check front to back, or you want to go from 45 degrees to 315 degrees. And the front to back from the model is 28 dB, a little bit more than 28 dB, and it's 7.3 dBi. Jerry talked about 5 dB a gain. That's what it is. You can take 2.1 off of the dBi figure, and that gives you straight dB of gain. So it's really got a super, super pattern for these four elements. And the next one, and this shows the elevation takeoff angle, and it's perfect for 80-meter DXing at 22 degrees. And you can see on the back of the antenna on the other side to the left where it's down 28 dB at the same 22 degree area. So it's very quiet overhead. There's no gain, and so it's very quiet, and it has great directivity. And for 80 meters, I mean, you have a couple of choices for directive antennas. You could put up a Yagi, and Jerry has had one of those, and they're very hard to keep in the air. These vertical antennas work extremely well. You've got great directivity, good gain, and if something goes wrong, you can get at them. So it's very, very impressive. Do we have another? No, that's the end of the slide. So that is the four-square story, Val.
We've been using it so far this contest season. Like last weekend, Jerry did CQ Worldwide CW unassisted classic category. So he was only on for 24 hours, right? Mm-hmm. And he worked 43 countries with that.
On 80, yeah.
Yeah,
and I could have worked probably another 25 or 30 if I would have been assisted, but I chose the classic category.
So if you have the space, it's a very good antenna.
Yep. And I can say working Europeans on 80-meter sideband, they can be giving me 5.9, 5.9 plus 10 reports, switch to the southwest, you know, changing it to 180 degrees, and they say I'm gone. So it's got great directivity. So,
all right, that kind of concludes it for this. I do have a little nugget. If you want to play that, Victor, this is for you, Amanda. This is the finished product. So we have a running joke with the missing monolith. So I just had to throw that in there. So let's head it over to Don and this week's segment for Amateur Radio Newsline. Take it away, Don.
Yep, got a good one for you this week. We don't have any Tamitha Scove, but we do have information on something weather-related that's not exactly solar. We'll tell you about that coming up right after the news from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2248, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, December 2nd, 2020. A major step forward in communications for eastern India. Amateur radio operators there have gained access to a major asset in the sky to help them with emergency communications.
The West Bengal Radio Club and the Indian Academy of Communication and Disaster Management have installed the capability to communicate with amateur radio satellites from the club station in India. The Radio Club Secretary, Ambarish Nag Biswas, VU2JFA, reported that HAMS recently used the setup to contact many amateurs in southern India as well as in more than 15 countries. He said the capabilities will be especially important during natural disasters such as cyclones, when HAMS generally use VHF and HF radios but often face propagation issues during these emergencies. Ambarish Nag Biswas, who is also chairman of the Disaster Management Academy, writes, and I quote, "It is the first satellite communication setup in our entire eastern India," end quote. And he called it a success of the team of the two organizations working together. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Graham Kemp, VK4BB, in IARU3.
Back in the U.S., organizers of Ham Radio University, who've been preparing for the 22nd annual all-day event in January, are taking the program online instead.
With COVID-19 restrictions preventing the annual gathering of the amateur radio operators on Long Island, New York, the Ham Radio University organizers are adapting the agenda to take place as a virtual conference. Ham Radio University will be held from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. on the 9th of January, 2021, as a go-to webinar video conference on the Internet. HRU will also serve as the online convention of the NYC Long Island section of the ARRL. The agenda features 14 presentations, from the basics of remote station operation over the Internet to software-defined radios, emergency communications, and the nuts and bolts of HF operating. This year's HRU is being presented in memory of its founder, Phil Lewis, N2MUN, who became a silent key earlier this year. Advance registration begins on December 15th. For additional details, visit hamradiouniversity.org. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Dameron, N8TMW.
You don't always need a script to simulate an emergency to sharpen your emergency preparedness. One ham radio club in Kentucky demonstrated that recently by going on air when a group of Jeep enthusiasts went off-road.
Members of the Lake Cumberland Amateur Radio Association partnered in early November with the Summer Nights Cruise Organization for the inaugural Jeep Nationals Trail event in the backwoods of Kentucky. According to Chris Perry, KY4CKP, while 38 Jeeps had off-road adventures in a local state park, a number of Elkara operators were at remote support locations with access to the 2-meter repeater as well as their MCOM trailer. During the 3-hour event, club members tracked the progress of the event and were prepared to summon help if any vehicles broke down or any medical issues arose. Chris said the trail ran through an area where cell service is practically non-existent, so the presence of the hams was vital. A YouTube video of the adventure narrated by Brian Perry, KY4BDP, summed up the point of the whole exercise. Brian says, "It doesn't have to be an emergency. You can practice your emergency communication procedures in a fun event where everybody has a good time." Video of the event can be seen on the Elkara channel on YouTube. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Christian Kudnick, K0STH.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for 4 decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Graham Kemp, VK4BB, Jim Dameron, N8TMW, Christian Kudnick, K0STH, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wellbanks, AE5DW73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And thanks, of course, to the Newsline crew. No Tamitha Scove this week because, well, it's finals week at the college where she teaches all about the solar weather. And so she's busy grading papers and all that is involved with that. So no solar report, but you can always check her out at spaceweatherwoman.com. Also, follow her on Twitter at Tamitha Scove. And, of course, her YouTube channel as well, Tamitha Scove. But switching over to weather of another type, Skywarn. Of course, very important, especially with the tornadic activity and the hurricanes that we've had this year, 2020, been a nuts year for weather. And Skywarn Appreciation Day is coming up this Saturday. And so there are going to be a lot of Skywarn stations, including National Weather Service stations on the air. Let's bring up those websites if we can. There we go. All about the National Weather Service Skywarn Appreciation Day. You'll find these links. Just do a Google search for Skywarn Appreciation Day, and you'll find all of these. And there's their Facebook page, so check that out. It's a great resource. And not only National Weather Service stations are going to be on, but also Skywarn volunteers and others are going to be on in this COVID world that we live in, because there aren't going to be any guest operators at the National Weather Service sites. The official sites at the weather stations, the forecast offices. So I'll be one of those on the air, hopefully this weekend coming up. Be listening for LIX, which is the three-letter enunciator for New Orleans, the New Orleans forecast office. And my number is LIX, that's Lima, India, X-ray, 368. And just do a search for Skywarn Recognition Day, and you'll find everything you need to know about that. And hope to work a lot of you coming up this weekend on Skywarn Appreciation Day. Growing up in Oklahoma with a tornadic activity and, of course, living down here for the last 40-something years, 37 anyway, Skywarn, very important to us down here. So we appreciate everybody who watches the weather. All right, Amanda, let's see what's going on in the chat room.
Oh, boy, I have a lot of stuff. But first, I want to say FR44, if you hear me on HF, that's where I'll be. This is Skywarn Recognition Day is pretty cool because they don't go strictly HF. So this is like for everybody, your technicians, everything. So your National Weather Services will get on the local repeaters as well and listen up and make some contacts this weekend because that's where they listen for their local weather, right? That's where they're listening for their reports and their Simplex. They'll be on there as well.
They'll be on DMR and Echolink and All-Star and all of the usual digital modes in there as well. I've heard there's going to be some FT8 and more than likely some RIDI and some PSK as well. So pretty much 80 meters through 440 is going to be open for Skywarn Appreciation Day. Maybe even some satellite contacts. I'm not sure.
That'd be pretty cool. I know that our local National Weather Service, they don't have any HF in there, so we'd be hard pressed to get them on HF, obviously. So we'll only be able to get them on repeaters and such, which will be fun just to get them to open up. A lot of them are a little mic shy. I know I've worked with a few of them, and they're like, "You go ahead," but I think they'll finally have some fun just not being intimidated by all of us hams in their office that do this all the time. So I'm looking forward to it. All right, thanks, Don. I still have Val and Jerry here with me, right? Yes, I do. Okay. So we had some major questions for you guys, and in fact, a lot for me. But a lot of people wanted to know, do we dare ask, how much did this Foursquare cost? Not the upgraded Jerry version, but the ground base version.
No, you don't want to ask. No, it's reasonable. And if anybody really wants to know, they should contact Tim.
Well, we can tell.
Or look in the DX Engineering catalog and figure it out. That's what I did.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way: if you're going to put up an 80 meter Yagi, you already know you have to have a checkbook for this, right? So we know.
Well, an 80 meter Yagi, when I bought mine, was. I'm trying to recall. It was
before me.
It was.
That's how old it is.
I don't know. I think it was with the rotator. I easily had 10 grand in that, and that did not include the tower. So this is cheaper than a Yagi and a rotator, and it's a lot easier to maintain.
Yeah, it's expensive.
But
we're talking now. I mean, I was thinking 20. So okay.
No.
Oh, for the
Foursquare? It's not in my budget.
No, not even close.
I think it's about 10, right?
Yeah, somewhere in that area.
Yeah. But
especially with all the help you have to do. So I'm going to go
in an auger. And then we did our own labor. His nephew works for him anyway, you know, so we kind of used him to help too. So
it was a time consuming project. It took several months. Or 3 or 4 months at least. So, and that was almost a daily, at least 4 or 5 days a week. So,
I bet.
But
I mean, it looks
still
like there's
easier
just like
to maintain
a lot of
than
steps.
A Yagi.
Oh, absolutely. You don't have to climb a tower to maintain it, clean any traps, anything like that.
You can pop it over.
So, this is the other thing. I am not very familiar with these four squares, and a couple people on chat, K0NEB, said he used one. So I haven't heard of them very frequently, maybe because of their costs that a lot of people don't use them. But who designed this? Like, who thought of, I know, let's put 4 verticals in the ground and add 60 radials to the bottom of that and see what happens. And where did this design come from, Jerry? Do you know?
I think it come from W1 Fox Charlie, W1FC, back maybe in the 70s. And it was a different type of phasing arrangement. He actually used different, instead of the hybrid box like DX Engineering has. And where's Tim? Tim should be in here. Hey, Tim. Tim is the
maybe Bob knows.
He's a Foursquare expert. But I think W1FC started out with this back in the 70s, possibly. So
Bob, would you know?
Yeah, that I was waiting to say that. That's when I remember. I got in 56, and during the late 60s and 70s, although I wasn't into the DX stuff like that, but I read the magazines, and it always seems that the W1FC came up a lot. And I think he probably could be anointed with the guy that came up with that.
Well, and I believe he start Microwave Associates back in those days? So he was really a microwave guy, but it all works out about the same.
Yeah. Lower frequency.
Yep.
Yeah. I think it did. Somebody else said, sorry, I missed it here. I think it was Eric, AC9BX. He says, AM stations have been doing these, got covered up here, these phase verticals for decades.
Yeah, but they're highly directional, and they don't steer their power and their directivity around instantly. They have a set pattern that's set by the FCC, so it's totally different than AM stations. And
but that night they have to change it, right?
All they do is go in and hit a switch, and it changes a couple things in their phaser boxes, and boom, that's
but
it.
This is really nice for contesting, because if all of a sudden we hear we're working Europe and we hear a JA just hit a button, and we're there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. This was for
omnidirection feature is really pretty nice too. You can hit the omni and it covers the whole band by magic. It just covers, so you can go from 3,500 to 4,000, and it's below 1.5 to 1. So it's, if you really want to cover the band, just use the omni feature. And what that does is divides the power equally amongst the four elements.
Okay, and I take it you can't use this on higher bands than what it was designed for. You can't go to 40 on this. Is that correct? No. Okay. And another question was, how many people actually use these antennas? I mean, Tim would probably know, because he knows how many he sells these.
There's a lot of
Contest stations. Stations.
And there's a lot of 80 meter DXers out there, and they're not that uncommon, and a lot of the big multis are around the world.
The big 80 meter rag chewers too.
So,
I'm pretty amazed.
There's a lot
with
of them out there.
Antenna. I'm more impressed with this than I am in a beverage, and I know beverages are pretty hard to put up and maintain as well. And
twice a year. I mean, in the spring, we put up our take down all our beverages to plant our crops. And then in the fall, we have to take it all down again. I mean, we keep one east-west beverage up. But, yeah, we do every year. Mm. Take them up, put them down.
So we have 10 of them out right now. They're 1,000
feet. Winter.
Yeah, it's 1,000. They're 1,000 foot each.
But come March, we got to take it all down.
Yeah. That's amazing. Well, thanks, you guys, for bringing that on. And what a great project. And I'm glad you guys got it finished in time for contest season. I don't have any other questions there for you guys. I'll go ahead, Bob.
I find it very, very wonderful and heartwarming that Jerry is with us and smiling. Thanks so much for being here, Jerry. Because you're the king. You and Duffy together, gosh knows what's going to happen.
Tim and I have a blast when we get together. We just
they get on a 40 meter net every night, the big gun net, and so they talk a lot on there.
Well, listen, I really appreciate. I know it's a lot of work to put this together, but it's now archived for anybody that wants to see it. We can guide them there. Thanks for coming. You guys have a nice Christmas, but we'll be talking to you before then. Maybe not Jer, but definitely Val. So it's been really good. Thanks so much.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Yeah.
Thanks, you guys. And great monolith. I can't believe Val and Jerry had time in their schedule to go out to Utah and rip that sucker off and plant it in their cornfield. Oh, you went to Romania.
I went to the music of a Space Odyssey, but we weren't sure about the copyright. But I'll send you the video with the Space Odyssey music. It's pretty cool.
So funny.
Well, it's been a wonderful show, and I'm sure glad that we had all these great guests, and we'll keep them coming. So be sure and tune in next week right here on Ham Nation. In the meantime, have fun on the radio, especially this weekend, but there's always lots of people to talk to, so get out there and get on the air. That's all we got to say. Thanks a lot. Good night, everybody. Thanks, Don, for your report, and Amanda, thanks for all, and we really appreciate what you guys did on the antenna project, and we'll have Kristen back. She's going to be back with us. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye for now.
Don't forget to find our nets on their usual spots. You know where they are.
Want more TWiT? Check out Tech News Weekly, twit.tv/TNW. Tech News Weekly is a show where Jason Howell and I bring the latest and greatest interviews to you from the people making and breaking the tech news. twit.tv/TNW.